He likes to sit in the shop window, and people love to see the puppy in the window. That's a sneaky move. One day, all hell broke loose. Police cars screeched to a halt at the front of the shop. 8 policemen charged in and secured the place. What? Before we dive in, a warning. The content of this podcast may not be appropriate for some young listeners. This is real life, and that means that sometimes it can be a little bit graphic. So listen on at your own peril. As a veterinarian, dog behaviorist, best-selling author, and trainer, over the past decade, I've had an obsession with transforming the behavior of dogs. Understanding their brains and creating practical strategies that you can implement easily at home. I know all too well when the dream you imagined when you first got your dog is far from your daily reality. In fact, out of the blue, a few months ago, my little dog Gorse was bitten by a dog 20 times her size. And suddenly our life of stress-free walks, a calm and cuddly household, and being teammates was replaced with reactivity, anxiety, and worrying about what's around the next corner. I'm Dr. Tom, this is the Help My Dog podcast, and this is me documenting that journey of transformation, sharing my knowledge and experience with you and having a few laughs along the way. Hey, Help My Dog family, welcome to this episode of the Help My Dog podcast. And it's been a bit of a busy week here. It's been a busy week because I've been doing some work with Gorse, which I'll fill you in on later. It's been hilarious kind of seeing the number of cringy stories. So watch this space because there's going to be, and it could be worse, section of the podcast. And I guess one thing that I've really noticed this week, and nearly always when this happens, you know, I get like the world tells me that I need to speak about something because it'll just be like one thing after another just keeps happening. I'm like, oh, I need to talk about this with all of you. Is, I guess, the danger of labels, okay? Because I've had a mixed week where I've been in the vet clinic, I've been in the behavior clinic, and been doing loads of other cool stuff. And one thing that keeps coming up is how sometimes we can all get a little bit stuck in our story. Yeah, we can all get a little bit stuck in what has happened. And, you know, Gorse's story is a great example of this. Because while I acknowledge what has happened, I acknowledge that you know, a few months ago, she got bitten by a dog 20 times her size. It changed her life. It changed our lives. And there's work to be done. You kind of got two options. You can kind of say, okay, you know, everything's really bad, there's no hope, this is really a problem, I can't believe this has happened to us. Or you could have the view of actually what a great opportunity to deliver a message to the world that there's always hope, right? Or hey, what a great opportunity that we get to overcome this challenge and in turn strengthen our bond together, yeah? Hey, what a great opportunity to figure it out, right? I think it's Marie Forleo, who always says, everything's figure outable. Yeah. And that's a bit of a motto that we have in the behavior clinic, that no matter how many times somebody has said to an owner, there's no hope, or that this dog's going to, you know, this dog can't be helped, or, you know, that's just how it's got to be. We're always like, everything's figure outable, right? We're going to figure this out. And so I think sometimes we get a little bit in the moment of we put labels on our dogs, or people put labels on our dogs. Like if you've had a trainer, or maybe, I don't know, a behaviorist, or maybe another professional in your life, or more often than not, it's like family members that put labels on your dog. Or what do you expect? He's a Jack Russell. What do you expect? Yeah, he's going to be like that forever. The number of people that messaged me after I said about what had happened to Gorse on my profile, saying, I'm really sorry, you know, life's never going to be the same. What if it is, right? What if actually it's going to be even better? And sometimes if we have these, like, you know, narratives in our head, it can be really challenging. I had a really interesting conversation with an owner this week in a behavior consult setting, and it's not the first time I've had a similar conversation. In fact, some of you, you know, I might have told some of you other similar conversations in the past. And the owner basically said, you know, it's a real shame that we can't resolve this. It's a real shame that we're not going to be able to, you know, transform this behavior. I love that, you know, that behavior can be transformed, but it's a shame that it's not an option for us. And I was like, what do you mean? And she was like, well, my dog is just the wrong age. My dog's older. And I was like, one, thinking there's no age where they're too old. And the second thing, I was like curious, like, I wonder how old her dog is. And I said, so, you know, how old is your dog? And she said, 3. And I was like, 3? 3? Like, this is, we can fix things no matter the age, but 3 we can definitely. Like, your dog is really young. And, you know, we can easily, you know, insidiously over time not realize that that's the route that we've gone down. And so, you know, I wanted to start this episode of the podcast by saying, take this opportunity to, like, do a purge and just be like, actually, I'm going to remove all of the labels that I've put on my dog or other people have put on my dog over the years. And this is starting from scratch. This is forgetting what happened before I owned my dog, right? This is forgetting what happened to my dog in previous homes. This is wiping the slate clean on traumatic events that happened to my dog. That time that dog ran into my dog in a training class, or, you know, that time that a family member, I told them to give her space and they didn't give her space and they traumatized her. How freeing is it going to be to actually say, right, you know, like the Etch-a-Sketch that you get as a kid, where you draw the drawing, and over the years you've drawn this drawing of your dog, the narrative, the story of your dog's life, and it looks a bit crazy right now. Imagine if we just go and it's gone, yeah? And we get to start from scratch. So that's what this podcast is all about, right? So we acknowledge that, yeah, my dog has struggles right now. Yeah, they find themselves in situations every day where they don't have the skills to deal with it. It leads to them barking, lunging, being anxious, being worried, maybe the opposite, just simply not listening. And they get labeled as naughty, stubborn, difficult. What do you expect as Border Collie? What do you expect? They're a Labrador, right? And actually, we're just going to go, yeah? Now we say, well, what skills does our dog need? What would really transform this struggle? What, you know, what could I teach my dog today that's going to help them in that situation? Because ultimately, I'm my dog's hero, right? And in turn, actually, we become a team again, yeah? Because we get rid of the story. Okay, so that was that. That was the rant that is over now. It was just like one of those situations where behavior consults, vet clients were absolutely saying, you need to talk about this. So in the last episode, if you've not checked it out, make sure to check it out. And if you've not left a review for it, leave a review. We talked about what's happening in the brain when your dog's being reactive, when they've got into that state of reactivity. And I'm talking about the brain is in a reactive state, yeah? It's not putting labels on them. That dog is reactive and they stay reactive forever. No, currently that is how I describe their behavior in their brain, and we can change that. Very different, okay? Sometimes people are like, you used a label. I'm like, well, oh, it's labeling an action, not your dog with like a big label on its forehead. So we identified that pessimism is going to play a part in this. We identified that their bucket is going to play a part in this, that bucket that gets filled throughout the days with exciting and scary events. And at some point it overflows. And that might overflow on a daily basis because it's so close to threshold. And then the third one was, think Catherine Tate versus microwave, ping, yeah? When your dog has massive, massive reactions to very tiny events. There's a mismatch between the size of the event and the size of the reaction, okay? So we've got those three things. Now, there's a system in the brain. Oh, and one more thing that we talked about for this whistle stop recap is that your dog right now, their primary question, the question that they're asking themselves in all those different situations that they find themselves in is, where's the threat? And when you ask yourself, where's the threat? You're going to find loads of threats. The way that you can think about this, I always tell this story in behavior consults, because it really makes you feel how your dog's feeling. Imagine I drop you in the center of London, okay? And I, on the busiest day, like imagine it's like Christmas shopping time, yeah? I'd avoid it like the plague, because you might catch the plague. And and you're walking down the street and I say to you, you need to look at every person in the eyes that you walk past and you need to ask yourself the question, Are they a good person or are they a bad person? You walk down the street, every single person you pass, you've got to look them in the eyes, right? And you've got to say, are you a good person or are you a bad person? And the thing that you'll find is you'll get about 5 or 10 people in and you'll start getting anxious. You'll start getting worried. You'll increasingly be like, I think that person over there is bad. I think that person over there is bad. And it's purely because of the question that you ask yourself, right? If I, you know, dropped you into the center of London and, you know, asked you to ask yourself the question, I don't know, find who is the kindest person here? Yeah. Walk past every person and describe how kind they are. Yeah. Your brain would suddenly find all the reasons why the person's, you know, really kind, or, you know, you'd start to look for those little clues of kindness. And this, there are two takeaways from this. First of all, the first example is what your dog is experiencing every walk, every, you know, if your dog's got separation anxiety, every time you stand up and move and they're like, are they moving to leave the house? Are they moving to abandon me? Are they moving to leave me here and I'd be traumatized? Now, of course, that's not actually what they're saying, but that is what their brain is doing. Every time they go to the vets, right, and they don't like being handled, yeah, where's the threat? What's going to happen? Yeah. And so maybe we'll do an entire episode on vet visits, because that is a really common struggle. And also, it highlights what happens when we label and describe our dogs in a certain way. And so if we have this label of my dog is, I don't know, my dog is aggressive, my dog is my dog is a problem dog, my dog is evil, my dog is trying to be dominant, trying to dominate me, yeah? Then you ask yourself the question, is my dog trying to dominate me? Is my dog being aggressive right now? And of course, if you ask all these questions, if you ask yourself this question, you'll find so many reasons why your dog is that thing, purely because you asked yourself that question. And of course, dominance isn't, just to clarify, we'll do an episode on dominance and how it's not actually a thing. But the point is that seek and you shall find, and that's for the bad stuff. And so imagine if actually seek and you shall find on the good stuff. Imagine, one, if we could teach our dogs to seek and they shall find the good stuff in day-to-day life, how that would transform their behavior. And secondly, imagine if we just approached dog owning like that. If we noticed all the little wins, all the little times that our dog's more optimistic, our dog's more confident, our dog's calmer, our dog's just generally more amazing, our dog's more of a superhero, how your relationship would change with your dog. And as a result of that, the cascade of effects that would have on your life and your dog's life, right? So we've established that the questions that the brain asks itself impacts the choices, the emotions, everything. What do we do about it? Well, there are two systems in your dog's brain. In fact, I'm going to head to the whiteboard for those of you who are watching. Those of you who are listening, I'm going to explain it. Don't worry, you're not missing anything. But I'm going to draw a brain up here, okay? And what I'm going to do is I'm going to draw on here two different systems, okay? And you can think of these as like little circuits in the brain that connect different brain areas. And there's two systems, okay? There's the seeking system, okay, that's involved in finding good stuff, finding pleasure, finding, you know, positive outcomes. Same for our brain, by the way. And then there's the avoidance system. Okay, the avoid system. And that's involved in actually avoiding danger, right? And so if your dog's in this like reactive state and they are, you know, perceiving things to be something to worry about, and that's presenting as unpredictability with other dogs, separation anxiety, resource guarding, just generally lights on no one's home, and you're not entirely sure what emotion they're experiencing, that avoid system is being switched on. And they're asking themselves the question, where's the threat? Where's the danger? Where's the thing to worry about? In turn, what are they going to do to kind of account for that? They're in a state of reacting, whatever that looks like for your dog. Yeah, barking, lunging, pulling on lead, maybe the opposite. Maybe they become really passive, tremble, shaking, you know, hiding, running away, not listening. And so that is as a result of the avoidance system. Now, the cool thing is with these two systems is when one gets switched on, it switches the other off. So right now, when the avoidance system switched on, it switches off the seeking system. There's a reason why your dog can't listen to you or can't be trained or maybe won't even take food when you're trying to support them in that environment, because the brain's like, switch that off, right? The brain's like, where's the threat? So you hand your dog a bit of food and they're like, poison, right? because of that system. And so the seeking system does the opposite. When you activate the seeking system in your dog's brain, it switches off the avoidance system. And so the question that they ask themselves is, where's the opportunity? Where's the good in this situation? Where's the thing that I can get, right? Where's the positive outcome that I can achieve? And yeah, that's great. It means we can train them. It means we can work with them. It means that we can teach them new things, teach them new skills. But even more important than that, it switches off the avoidance system. So it switches off that system of reaction. Now that's really important. And it's really important from the point of view of your dog and their struggle that they're facing right now. And obviously, you know, if we relate this to Gorse's story, her brain after, you know, little recap, she got bitten by a dog 20 times her size, and definitely she's in avoid mode, definitely she's in where's the threat mode. If we can switch on the seeking system, then in turn it switches off the avoidance system. So we're going to talk about how we do that. But before we do that, because it was a big hit, we are going to do the It Could Be Worse section of the podcast. And a little recap for those of you that don't know what the It Could Be Worse section of the podcast is, it's the section where you feel better because other people, it's worse for other people right now. And so we share stories where maybe their dog's embarrassed them, maybe their dog's just done something absolutely mortifying, and actually it's still all fine. The world is all fine and we're a family. It's a safe space. These stories are anonymous, don't worry. And if you get your story read out, you're going to be like, oh my God, is he going to say? I won't say your name, I promise you. Right, and I've not seen these. Let's have a little look. And I will change the name of the dogs as well. Okay, so hi Tom, a little story for you. My parents have a jeweler's shop. I gave them one of my 8-week-old German Spitz puppies that I had bred. He went to the shop every day with them and was the star attraction. He liked to sit in the shop window and people loved to see the puppy in the window. That's a sneaky move. One day, all hell broke loose. Police cars screeched to a halt at the front of the shop. 8 policemen charged in and secured the place. What? Mum and Dad had to prove they weren't being held at gunpoint or had a robber threatening them in the back shop. Turns out naughty puppy had chewed the break glass alarm wires in the window, triggering the silent alarm and sending the local station into meltdown. That is insane. And I feel like that's one of those stories where that will never happen again. It's just like once in a lifetime. Awesome. Right. What else have we got? So we've got funny naughty dog story. At 17, my folks had gotten a little dog after my, at the time, fiance had broken up with me. To lift my spirits. That's so sweet. They were preparing to move from the West Coast, California to Washington, D.C. as my dad was a huge meteorological scientist, and had a large party planned before their departure. Many big meteorologists and scientists my dad had worked with in attendance, so very high class party. The puppy was about seven or eight months old. Hold on, let me start this again. So many big meteorologists and scientists my dad had worked with in attendance, so very high class party, and puppy about 7 or 8 months old who had an affinity for dirty women's undergarments. I'm sure you can see where this is going. I hope not. I had somehow popped the door to the laundry room open and pranced out into the middle of the party, proud. Hold on. This is very confusing. There is a lot going on here. Oh, the dog had. Is this right?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. So the puppy had somehow popped the door to the laundry room open. Yeah, that would have been weird. The puppy had somehow popped the door to the laundry room open and pranced out into the middle of the party, proudly brandishing a pair of my sister's pretty pink satin bloomers, jumped into the lap of one of the wives and presented her with his prize, much to the horror of my sister and my mother. I, of course, retrieved my dog and said, prize as gratefully as possible until the under the circumstances. I can't read today. This is the reality. My sister, however, as I was passing her with pup and prize, muttered some choice words about my pup. My 17-year-old pride took over, so I presented her with her pretty pink underpants in front of everybody. I, of course, was grounded for a week. My pup, none the wiser of his crime, went on to plenty more panty raids, but none that ever topped that one. Well, yeah, I tell you what, when I started this podcast, I did not think I would be uttering the words panty raids, but I'm pleased it's happened. Right, okay, one more. Hey Tom, here is my embarrassing dog story from Australia. Hope you're doing well, I'm doing great. Our Kelpie cross, I've almost said the name, Barkington, had the worst toilet habits. He had a knack for picking the most awkward spots to do a poo. One day in our travels, we walked down to the water and stopped to chat with an older couple who were sitting on the edge of the boat ramp having lunch. Oh no. They had obviously kayaked there, judging by their attire and the fact that they were sitting next to two tethered kayaks. Barkington suddenly squatted and dropped a poo right next to the people, half out of the water, half in. We were so embarrassed and kept apologising. We couldn't pick it up as the water was slowly starting to wash it away. At this point, the man just said, "Don't worry, I've got this." What? Why is he taking ownership? "Don't worry, I've got this." Stood up, walked to the rubbish bin, picked up a disposable cup, walked into the water and scooped the poo out, then proceeded to put it all in the bin. By this stage, we were wishing that the ground would open up. He washed his hands and went back to his lunch. We thanked him profusely and got out of there as fast as we could. I mean, I'm confused on many levels with that one. Okay, it does kind of remind me of a really embarrassing story that I have that I should not take ownership of. And it was when Illy was a puppy and she was just like the most loving, lovable thing. But she did have a bad habit of eating like cow poo and horse poo. And she's a standard poodle and she had like a really hairy muzzle. And so it was messy, right? And there was one day where I just like turned my back for a second. It was like 6 a.m. as well. Like you just did not expect to see anybody else. And we were on our walk, we were on the moor, and Illy was doing what she did, which was just to eat lots of poo at the time. And I didn't know better. Well, yeah, she still does that a little bit now. It's still her favorite thing. And then suddenly there was a toddler in a like one of those like all-in-one like what are they called? Overalls. Romper suit, yeah? And Illy, and suddenly toddler was like stroking Illy, and Illy was like, "Oh, hi." And she turned her head, and basically what she must have done is wiped her face on the toddler's face. And I turned back around, and the toddler was just like covered in like a mask of poo. And then the worst thing was, the parents appeared. Like it was like all happened so quickly, and I was like, "Oh, I saw it." The parents saw it, and the parents were totally fine about it. And this little toddler was just obsessed with dogs and seemed to just be like free everywhere. But it was definitely one of the most embarrassing moments. I was like, "I'm hiding. This is not my dog. This is a moor dog that I have also found. I found her in a bog." So yeah, that definitely was not a fun one. These stories, they're getting better and better. I feel like we're on it. What are we on? Episode 2, and yeah. And how many have we had? I love it. I love it. Well, they have to be like, we have to get the bleeper. I have to get like a little bleeper button. Bleep. All right, guys. So, you know, as we've said before, we do this section of the podcast because it feels so lonely to have a dog with behavior struggles. You have moments of being embarrassed. Worse still, you have moments popping up, moments of people popping up and then shaming you. And it's like, I'm already cringing enough. And so this is a safe space. This is a family. We basically, it's your opportunity to be able to share these anonymously. Some of you want to be shouted out and we're like, no, you shouldn't be claiming that, right? So we anonymize it. You know, the big thing is that even though it feels so lonely at times when you're on that kind of dog owning, dog training journey, we're all connected all over the world, and weekly we get to get together and you know, share our embarrassing moments, which I seem to be able to share one every episode, so I've probably had a fair few as well. All right, so let's dive back into this, you know, what you could think of as like the reactivity switch, okay? And that is when you switch on or switch off that avoidance system. And we do that by switching on the seeking system. When one switched on, the other switched off. And so if we switch on that seeking system, we're winning. So if I share with you what Gorse has been doing this past week and is going to be doing into next week. So we've taken a break. We've let her brain go, yeah? We've let her brain go, shake it off. And now what we need to do is start to build. And the way that we're going to build is we're not going to do anything in the situation. We're building skills for this situation. We're going to switch on her seeking system. So that's involved a few different strategies. The first strategy is that she's basically finding all of her food. So she's got her daily food allowance. Admittedly, it's not big. She's only 2.5 kilos or whatever. And so we're thinking of as many different ways for her to seek out that food as possible. That might be in the form of, you know, scatter feeding in long grass. So we chuck, you know, a handful of her dry food into grass and she's got to hunt it out and sniff it out. And I can tell you the first day we tried that, she was like, no, I can't do it, right? And it makes sense. Her brain's saying, no, I don't seek. I don't think, where's the opportunity? I don't kind of think, where's the positive outcome? And she just looked at us like, what are you doing? So what we did is we actually just worked on firing bits of food across the floor and she would chase them. And then we said, okay, can you do it, you know, on the, I don't know, the kitchen floor tiles, right? So it's not difficult to see the food. Then can we do it on the grass? And what we started to see is that she was getting more and more able to sniff out, scent out. And the interesting thing, and maybe we'll talk about this in a future episode, is that the more we can engage the nose with your reactive dog, the more we disengage the eyes, right? And so when a dog is reactive, often they're very visual, and often they're barking and lunging at a visual of something. So the more we can engage actually them seeing that there's another sense here, and that is scent, the more we kind of get better results with them. The other thing is that scent is really closely linked in terms of brain area to optimism. So the more your dog sniffs and uses its nose, actually you can think of it as you're growing their optimism as well. And of course it switches on that seeking system, which in turn switches off the avoidance system. So we've been doing, first of all, the food chasing. We've been doing scatter feeding. And the third thing that we've been doing is we've been trying to do some very basic, like, problem-solving type games with her. So that initially it just started as, like, food puzzles. So that might be a Kong or even just a long-lasting chew. It might be, you know, one of those food balls where you put in some food and they roll it around and it makes noise and the food appears. Basically, the more we can get them to engage in something and get positive outcomes, the more it starts to switch on that seeking system, okay? So she's doing 100% of her daily food allowance through seeking, finding, having fun, okay? And in turn, what we're hopefully going to see is that she moves away from that state of reaction. Now, what your dog might be ready for, and I definitely want to make sure that everybody gets value. Like, I don't, you know, anybody that's been taught by me before knows that I'll keep going until everybody in the room has got value. That's like number one priority. So if your dog will find that like a piece of cake, they're like, this is so easy. This is, you know, I'm totally fine with this. I'm into the seeking. You can start to take that to different locations, okay? But here's a bit of a tip. You want to take that to different locations, but make it clear to your dog that that's what you're doing. So a game that we really like, and we use it in behavior consults all the time, it gets amazing results, is get some kind of yoga block or box or a book that you don't, you know, want anymore. Something that your dog, that is big enough for your dog to put their feet, their front feet on. And all you're gonna do is at home, they're gonna put their front feet on the block. You're gonna feed them for putting their front feet on the block. And then you're gonna throw a piece of food away and you're gonna pick the block up. Then you're gonna pop the block down again. You're gonna feed them for putting their feet on the block, a little bit like a vending machine. When they press the block button, you're gonna feed them some of their daily food allowance. You're gonna throw a piece of food away again. You're gonna pick the block up. You're gonna put it down until they're like, huh, where's the block? Where's the vending machine? Where's the opportunity? You see how that ties into the seeking system, right? Now what you can do is take that to different locations. And because there's that visual there of the block, right? And we know that, as we've talked about, visuals really important when your dog's kind of worried, often they go eyes first. And so if we've got something to be like, point your eyes at this, it's gonna really help us. The block goes down, feet go on, they say, where's my vending machine? Where's the opportunity? Engage the seeking system, feed them, throw a piece of food away, okay? So challenge between this episode and the next episode could be that you go to 10 different locations that where your dog's not going to see the dangerous thing, the threat, the thing that's going to worry them or anything that's going to worry them, and you take your block with you. And that's something that Gorse will be moving on to at some point. She's definitely not ready yet. What we're going to be working on is we're going to be working on just getting engaging that seeking system, maybe upping the challenge of some of the problem solving games and building it up to maybe doing it then outside and maybe doing it in different parts of the garden, right? And just a simple change of a different part of the garden will probably be enough for Gorse at this stage. So guys, as you probably know, it feels lonely when you have a dog that has behavior struggles. You probably, you know, made yourself vulnerable in the past and reached out for advice. And when you've reached out for advice, maybe you've got great advice and you've no longer got the, you know, the struggle anymore and everything's fine. Brilliant, awesome, amazing. But sometimes you put yourself in the hands of a professional and actually they don't help. They maybe make it worse. They maybe told you to do things to your dog that didn't resonate with you, but you did them because you were in the hands of a professional, and maybe you did some things that you feel a bit guilty about. Get rid of the guilt, right? Remember, we're shaking the Etch-a-Sketch or wiping it clean or whatever. Those things are the past right now. And you kind of wish you'd found a better way sooner. And so the way that you can ensure people find a better way sooner than you did is actually to share the podcast. Share the podcast. Leave a review. Remember, we're doing this thing where when you leave a review on, you know, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever else, I don't know, wherever you're listening to the podcast on, and you get entered into a prize draw, and you could win a behavior consult with one of the Behave Vet team. And you know, that's worth hundreds of pounds, and even more when you think about, you know, the impact that that could have on your life in terms of living your dog-owning dream. And we're gonna pick one person every month from the people that leave us a review. So make sure to leave a review, share it with a friend. If you've got a story that you think would make people feel better about maybe some of the experiences they're having at the moment, and you know, you want to give the gift of an it could be worse moment, right? All you need to do is email cringe@helpmy.dog. That's C-R-I-N-G-E @helpmy.dog, right? And we will then we'll then have a little look. I'm not allowed to read them. I've got to read them. I've got to read them to all of you. But basically, sometimes I can just hear laughs, and I know that that's what is happening. And then I want to find out. I'm like the one that gets left out. I'm like, oh, guys, what are you reading? And they're like, none of your business. I'm just fine. I'll be lonely. Well, I'll share it with you guys. That was this episode of the Help My Dog podcast. Share it, review it, send us your embarrassing, cringy stories, and we will see you next time.